Hello, welcome to Relatable. This is your host, Teresa Freeman. Today we have a fantastic interview. Today I talk with Aza Owosum, who was the third runner-up in the hit reality show Big Brother Season 23. Aza dishes on the process leading up to her participating in the TV show and how her path led her to being chosen. She also gets real about her upbringing as a pastor's kid and the impact that had in her decision-making in going to college and what she studied. With her passion for international studies, she had mapped out her entire career. Failed interview after failed interview led her to work in hospitality at a hotel. From there, she made moves to get into the world of tech and has adapted her career roadmap because of her love for listening to people and showing empathy. She has such great energy throughout the interview. Enjoy this episode. All right, Aza, well, I am so happy that you're here today. Thank you so much for coming.
It's a pleasure.
I can't wait for us to have this conversation. We've been chatting a lot via digitally to have the conversation. And I think we've had a lot of great conversations over the last couple of years. And I just think you're someone that has a lot of insight. And I think people can benefit from your story and from your experiences. So I really appreciate you making the effort to be in the studio, which is great. And I know that you're local, right? You're in the D.C.
I'm Maryland. In Washington, D.C. now.
You are. Yes. Okay. So maybe let's just start a little bit with your background. Like, where did you grow up? And like, where did you go to school? Let's talk a little bit about that as sort of a intro to Aza.
Yes. Well, I'm a DMVer. I'm a Maryland girl, born in D.C. It's now Trader Joe's, but it used to be Columbia Hospital for Women, right on 25th in Pennsylvania. And grew up in Maryland, Germantown. So I pretty much, even though I was born in D.C., was raised my entire life in Maryland. I have a bit of a unique upbringing. My parents are from Cameroon, Africa, and they're pastors. So I grew up with a very, very strict upbringing, and when it came time to go to college, I wanted to get as far away as possible. So the deal I made with my parents was I had to stay on the East Coast. So I went to the southernmost of the East Coast to University of Miami, and that's where I went to school. Yes.
My son is going to go bananas. He wants to go to Miami. He's in eighth grade.
He
does. And he's a huge Kane fan. He's a huge Dolphins fan. And he is up. So he's in eighth grade. And we know, like, it's tough to get into. And so, and it's obviously very expensive. And so I'm like, you need some scholarship money.
Yes.
And so, oh, wow. So did you love that? Was that a good experience?
It was a great experience. Yeah. I grew up so sheltered. I never went to a party my entire life. I didn't kiss a boy till I was 19 years old. So a little bit of a culture shock.
Yeah, so you got everything
just
at once.
I got everything at once, but thank God I didn't go crazy or anything like that. Miami, you know, a lot of people see it in terms of South Beach and partying and things like that. But also, it's an incredibly culturally rich city. You look at, I lived in Little Haiti for a while. I lived in Little Havana for a while. You know, there's a huge Haitian community, huge Cuban community, a huge Jamaican community. You can live your entire life in Miami without speaking English and you'll be just fine. The signs are in Creole and in Spanish everywhere. And I think I just had I think it taught me really to be culturally open. And I think it's what's helped me to kind of be just able to kind of handle a lot of different types of circumstances, because literally anything happens in Florida and most certainly anything happens in Miami.
Well, and I was just thinking as you're talking too, to after being so sheltered to then to have the spirit or to take on that risk of I'm going to go far away and I'm going to have this completely different experience. Were you at all nervous to do that?
I was. There was a part of me that was nervous, yes. But
did you know anyone there?
I had never even visited the campus.
Oh my God.
I had
was that the only school you applied to, or did you apply to?
I applied to others, and I did get into others as well. I was very unique in what I wanted, and I ended up changing things later, but I wanted a school with a good theater program. I wanted a school in or near big city, and I wanted a school that had a good football team, because I was super into football in high school. So that school kind of took care of so many of my things and narrowing down my choices. And they gave me some money as well, too. So I convinced my parents to let me go. Took some convincing, but I told them, hey, you all said I need to be on the East Coast. So I picked the East Coast.
You just followed?
Yeah.
You know, just like on the fringe of the guidelines.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And they kind of like, was like, okay, we'll let her go. We'll let her go.
How was that? Just, I'm interested because I have a freshman in college right now that just started at JMU this year. So how was that assimilation for you that first semester? Do you remember? I know it's probably been a minute.
I laugh at, you know, I still have that friend group and it's crazy. The 10-year anniversary is now a bunch of people came that went down for homecoming. But I remember my first week there, I'm so thankful that they can still be friends with me. Mm-hmm. I told everyone, I don't drink alcohol. I don't do this. I don't do it. And I was very much a prude. Mm. But, you know, I guess my personality was what still allowed me to have friends. So they kind of, I was just kind of that prude, you know, for a while.
Yeah.
Until I kind of loosened up, you know, I would say I loosened up maybe my second semester. But it was a shock. It was definitely a shock. I remember heading to my first party I'd ever been to. I mean, this might be too much to say, but I mean, drugs are a bit prevalent down there. And
I'm sure they're at every school.
Yes.
You know, like it's
They are. Yep. And I remember it was cab rides back then. There was no Uber.
Right.
And so we were on our freshman campus with some guy friends of mine on the first floor. And they were like, oh, let's go to this part. They said they have cocaine. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Yep. Oh. And I got about the car and ran into my room and sat home and watched Sister Act instead. it was definitely an adjustment, I would say. But I mean, the cool thing about college is you meet so many different types of people. So if that's what you want, you know, you have that.
Right.
But you know, there's also just different types of people, and I ended up meeting a quirky group of zany, quirky friends that had the same types and interests as I did, and just allowed me to just thrive in college.
I think that's such an important message around finding your group and being patient to do that.
Yes.
And like you said, there's a lot of opportunity. Even at smaller schools, I went to a really small school, same thing. Like you just have to have some patience to find the people that best suit you and not trying to be something you're not.
Yep.
Or, you know, for you to kind of go to that scene and be like, you know, figure out like, oh, this isn't quite right. I'm going to give myself time to find the right group.
Absolutely.
And then so you said you went there for theater. So this will touch on like, we're going to get to the Big Brother experience in a minute. But did you act in high school?
I did. I was very serious about theater in high school. I did acting all 4 years, musical theater as well too. Did chamber choir and voice. And with my African upbringing, in a lot of African homes, the expectation, education is kind of at a threshold. And a lot of people, you expect to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, things like that. And my parents were originally strict on me, and my deal with them was I was going to study theater and then go to law school. That was the plan.
That's a great combo, actually.
It was,
you have to have the theatrics, right, if you're going to be a trial lawyer.
Unfortunately, I wouldn't say unfortunately, because I think I'm appreciative of all the life experiences that I have, but I was so burnt out from high school theater that when I got to college, I kind of doubted myself, and I was too afraid to audition my first year for anything. Mm. And then, just creeping in of uncertainties of my friends who were studying theater, who were getting their BFAs or who were getting their degrees, and they were not working. They end up working, you know, as a waitress or working front desk at a hotel. And I was starting to get afraid, and I didn't believe in myself. And I took an economics class as a elective, but I ended up really liking it because I happened to actually be good at math in high school too. And I ended up deciding to change my major to economics and international studies when I graduated. And my parents were like, so you left D.C., the economic and political capital of the world, to go to Miami and end up studying that. And I psyched myself out and ended up studying, doing those majors instead. But I learned my lesson with that as well, which I'm happy to talk.
Yeah, for sure. So there's something I was going to ask you about. Oh, do you have siblings?
I'm one of five girls.
Oh my gosh, we're five girls. Yeah. I'm one of five, but there are four girls and one boy.
Oh,
so we have some similarity there.
Yes.
But so there's three girls, a boy, and then me.
Oh wow.
So where are you in the five?
I'm second to last. I was the youngest for a while, for 8 years.
Wow. Yes. Wow. What was that like growing up with all that female energy?
Yeah. You know, that's so funny. They say that boys, you know, fight more and all this stuff. Not true.
Not true. You guys have plenty
of... Oh, yeah. We pulled each other's hair. We were... I think we stressed my parents out a lot. Yeah. But at the same time, we were somewhat, I would say, good kids in the sense that we really liked my parents. So we were a little bit kind of crazy, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel so bad when I put my parents through as just little kids. As high school, we were very well behaved.
Yeah.
But we didn't have cable in the house because it was my fault. So we used to watch Power Rangers. And I got so into Power Rangers that my dad came home one day and I was hiding on top of the refrigerator naked with a knife. And I jumped on his back and said, go Power Rangers. And that was the last time we had cable. So we didn't have any cable in the house. And my parents just gave us books instead. And that was the only thing. We'd literally be running around like mad women. Oh, and then, like, a book would be the one thing that will settle us down. But we were a very rambunctious crew.
Hey, it probably prepared you for a big brother.
Living with a lot of crazy people. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just having to live with a lot of, like, growing up as one of five, even though there was a lot of distance between me and my older siblings, I think you learned something having to cohabitate with that many people and sharing and like different personality types.
Yep.
And we have all sorts of stories similarly of like the ones that are a little more lively than others.
Yes.
And, you know, so it's interesting. It prepares you in ways that you don't necessarily think of.
I believe that most definitely. I mean, you living in that house of 16 individuals, I mean, I've had four roommates for most of my life. So
and are you all pretty close?
I would say we're close. Yes, we are. We definitely are. We I think having that upbringing, going through a lot of difficult challenges together, has allowed us to be very transparent, open, honest with each other, but our dynamics are still there, which is really funny.
It's cool too as you get older. I think now as an adult, my siblings were older, so they had kids before me, and so it was really helpful to me when I had kids because they'd been through it. And even in their marriages and relationships, I feel like I always say that I've had it a lot easier, and just I think because of them, like, I'm kind of on the backs of my sisters in a way, like in terms of what I've been able to do, because they really helped me and like shepherd the path so that mistakes that they made or insights that they learned, I was able to be like, okay, I'm going to go this way or I'm going to do it that way.
Absolutely.
All right. So we met working together.
Yes.
And so I want to talk a little bit about, because you said it's been 10 years, about your path and your career before Big Brother. And then obviously I know people listening are going to want to hear all about that experience and how that came to be. What I love about your story, particularly for our show here, we talk a lot about navigating your path and different opportunities and different careers, and how do you have access to those careers, and what is it that enabled you to have the career that you have, either have had or have. And so for you, I think, you know, and you'll probably educate me even further, I'm curious, there's obviously a big break between kind of what would be characterized as a traditional professional path and then what you were doing with entertainment. So tell me a little bit about once you graduated in your path to like corporate America.
Yes, sure. So I graduated, and what I had always thought I would be doing was international development. I felt, at least that's what I felt that I was drifting towards in college when I decided to change my major. And I got a United Nations Foundation fellowship for a year, and that's what I was working for a year. So I was like, okay, perfect. Got my first step here.
Mm-hmm.
I had an entire map of what I was going to do. I was like, okay, I'm going to do this for some time. I'll probably go to graduate school. I'm still deciding if I want to go into law or possibly maybe get a master's in economics. I wasn't certain at the time, but I felt like I had a great first step by getting this fellowship. So I did that fellowship for a year, and I just felt like the doors will be open for me in DC. I'm in DC after all.
Right.
I'm going to be able to get all these opportunities and jobs. I was interviewing for the IMF and the World Bank. I was in the final rounds for both of them. And then I got turned down. So I was like, okay, that's okay. I'll find something at International Development Organization. And I could not find anything. And my friend was a sales coordinator in a hotel at the time. And she was like, okay, while you're waiting to get into your jobs, go ahead and take this front desk job for some months, and then once you get your job, then you know you'll be fine, you can leave. I ended up being in that job for 2 years. I applied to over probably 150 wow. positions during that time, and I didn't get anything. And I'm a person of faith, so I think how I view it is I don't think that that was a path that God wanted for me. But I went from getting a very coveted fellowship and thinking I had set my mark in internet development to not getting anything. And I sat down and I was like, okay, I don't want to work front desk for, you know, the rest of my life. And other thing I was telling myself was like, oh my goodness, like what I was so afraid of in college of me deciding to change and not do theater.
Wow.
I did the safe route. It was happening anyway. So I was like, all right, how can you work this that's going to help you, that's going to be something in line with your interests? And in hotels, there's something called revenue management where you basically, it's basically strategizing the room rates and things to try to get to 100% sellout as possible. And it does take numbers and it does take strategy. And with my economics background, I was like, I think this is where I would try to fall in line with. So I started pushing my career towards revenue management. I moved up from front desk to a revenue analyst at that hotel company, ended up working at another hotel company, and was pretty much told myself, okay, I guess I'm going to be doing revenue management for the rest of my life.
The hospitality track,
yes,
right?
Yes, hospitality track.
Yeah.
I will say, working front desk in a hotel and getting cursed out in 24 different languages also was a great breath of life experience for me.
You have good stuff for interviews, man.
Yeah.
Like,
thank you.
It's like a lot of fodder there for that. Yeah.
I was working, and a friend of mine at a company I was working at moved to a hotel startup, a data analytics hotel startup. And they were just ramping up, and they needed someone, a sales associate, to help them ramp up. And so I decided to leave. When that company got bought out by Hilton that I was at, I decided to leave and join that startup. And that's how I came into, tech. And so I was a sales associate there, and there was a system that's been around for some time called Salesforce. And I noticed that we had been using a consultant, but everyone was still really confused on how to deal with it, how to work the database. And when I started looking up on it, I saw that there was a lot of opportunity in Salesforce. And I also saw that I could still do a lot with the data analytics in terms of dashboards and reports. So I started teaching myself how to do it. And my company ended up purchasing my certification. And then I ended up being the sales admin, sales ops person there. And that's how I transitioned from a sales associate to sales operations, which is what I ended up doing at Care Journey. And that's how my journey began in sales operations.
Wow. So let me ask you this too, in terms of your own motivation to find the right path, what was your goal in terms of, is it a financial goal? Is it a goal around, you know, fulfillment of feeling like I'm, you know, doing a thing that's actually tapping into my strengths? Is it, you know, for you, because you've had to now pivot a couple times based on what you love, you're sort of being told no. So tell me, what was the goal during this point in terms of moving forward? Did you have specific goals and milestones that you were trying to hit?
I would say I definitely wasn't. I wanted, for me, I'm actually still working towards exactly what my purpose is. But what I definitely always wanted to be able to do is I want to make an impact. And what I loved about sales operations, and what I still do love about sales operations, is it takes a lot of listening to people. It takes a lot of listening to a sales team. Not to be mean, but a lot the sales team can act like children in terms of their problems and things.
Yeah.
And being that middle person between sales and marketing and solving problems and actually seeing impact, especially at a time when startups or mid-sized companies are starting to ramp up and starting to scale. I love to see the impact that it makes, and I love to solve problems and solve messes. And I truly did find a lot of gratification in that, and I found happy. And I'm someone who I feel that one can kind of have different purposes, you know? In my career, I felt super happy in my career and being able to make an impact through that. But I was also doing things on the side just to satisfy my creative energy.
Yeah.
I was competing in pageants for fun. I did pageants during that time. I was doing like local plays. I was singing in my church. So I was able to fulfill both.
I love that.
Oh, both outlets, I would say, and pursue both things that are truly things that are important to me and that I have passion in.
I love that. And I feel like it's such a great message to round out the experience of whatever you're doing if you can't find it within the job. A lot of times our jobs can't be that holistic in terms of meeting all the needs. So being able to find those other things in your life that are important, that give you joy, that give you strength, you know, that kind of round out that experience is so, and the fact that you found it and were really active in that. So let's talk a little bit then about how Big Brother came to be. And that was while you were while we were working together. So what is that process like? How did that come to you in terms of an opportunity? Is it something that you watched and you were into? Tell me a little bit about that path.
Realatable is sponsored by TFA Soft Skills, your one-stop shop for workshops, coaching, speaking, and soft skills development. If you'd like to hire Teresa, visit www.tfasoftskills.com for more information.
I am what you call a Big Brother superfan.
Oh.
I love the show. I find the show so fascinating. At the time, I just found it so incredibly fascinating seeing 16 strangers from all around the world being put in a house, locked in a little shoebox, and just clawing at each other, fighting for money. It was so fun to me. Now I realize it was a lot harder than I thought, but it was so entertaining. And what everyone always calls Big Brother, it's a social game. And as I was watching it, I was like, you know what? I always felt like I found myself someone who could make friends easily.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt someone who... I felt that I could also, I didn't come across as threatening to people as well, too. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, I was like, you know what? I think I could actually win this. You know, some people come and they apply to every single reality show, whatever.
Right.
That wasn't me. I'm not really a Bachelor watcher. I love Real Housewives, though. Real Housewives is really funny. but I always just found Big Brother so entertaining. And it was my, it has a bit of a cult following in the sense that I was the only one of my friends who watched it.
My niece is just obsessed. She is obsessed. She wants to be on there. She's like sent tapes. And so she's going to be listening to this interview for sure.
Awesome. I'm happy to send her tapes. Okay. She's like, yes.
I'll hook you guys up because she is obsessed.
Awesome. Yeah. So you're either in or you're out in the sense of if you're
in, because
it's a big commitment. The show comes on 3 times a week. And then you have live feeds. So each season, if you're watching a season, if you don't sit down and watch a season, that's 37 episodes. So that's 37 hours you're spending.
Wow.
Yes, over a course of a season. But then Big Brother has what's unique amongst any other reality show is that Big Brother has live feeds where people can log in and watch the players 24/7. So you have people who watch you when you're showering, when you get up, when you brush your teeth, when you're strategizing. Every single move that you make, somebody is watching.
Creepy.
it's very, and you know, I didn't realize, I mean, at the time I would just be entertained by it, but yeah, and you form these very, people end up becoming emotionally attached to these characters that you watch. You feel like you are them, you, and whenever they do moves against people, people are very passionate and things like that. So it has a cult following, mm-hmm. and I was part of that cult.
Both before and after. Yes. Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I really think I could do well in this. I think I could win this. And I sent an application in. I sent an application in 2019. I spent 8 minutes just talking about how much I love the show and I never heard back. Then the next year I sent an application 2020 and I spent 2 minutes just talking about myself. And the producer called me and was interested, but then COVID happened. So they shut down casting, and then the next year, I didn't even apply. The casting producer called me and said, we saw your tape from last year, and we really want to see if we can get you on. And so it was a process of 4 months of psych interviews, psych evaluations, multiple interviews, meeting everyone from production to the heads of CBS, background checks, drug tests, interviews with my family of how is this person as a person. It's a very, very extensive, drawn out process. During that time, I was kind of in a conundrum with Care Journey too, because I'm like, okay, I don't know if I'm going to be getting, I'm blessed, wasn't sure. And then until that day, June 23rd, when they literally kidnapped me and picked me up and shipped me off to Los Angeles. And I didn't come back for...
Do they really kidnap you?
pretty much. So they don't really tell you that they don't really tell you that you're that you made it. I still was being told we're not very certain, and so
is that because they want to protect like the anonymity of the whole thing? Is it part of the
anonymity? The fans are so passionate that they scour the internet looking for any traces of things. It's like. But even me getting, you get blindfolded when being brought into places. The hotel location is extremely secret. And they don't like to reveal the cast. Like, the cast is a complete surprise. And it's they're very big on picking what they call ordinary characters from around the United States and just plucking them out. And just when once you're kind of being pushed out to the world, then it... literally this like pandemonium in terms of the community. People start looking you up, people start finding things, people really, really go into deep detail. It has a very obsessive fan base.
Yeah, yeah.
So when they just came and said, oh, I want to ask you a couple questions, see your family, and they film me doing different things. We're still not really sure we're going to pick you. And then they showed me my key, and then they said, okay, you're leaving in 2 hours. And I went to the BWI airport and saw my parents and my family and everyone for the last time, and I didn't see or hear from anybody in my family for sequester was 11 days, so I didn't see anybody for over 100 days, my family or anybody.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they just locked me
in. And part locked yes. in that, like, so. And that, and because you did well in the competition, so then you're gone even, you know, your stay ends up being a lot longer than maybe some other people.
So, if you're the first 4 people eliminated, you get to go home to your family. But if you're the last 12, you join something called the jury. And so even when you get eliminated, you get put locked in a house in Calabasas. And so, because they don't want any type they don't want you to leave and then see, oh, they did this to me. They want it to be very like your decision on, because the jury is who votes on who the winner is at the end. So they want,
no like prejudice, right? Like they want you to be kind of clean as they're watching it and just deciding based on what's happening.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we could probably spend, you know, 2 hours probably talking about your whole experience. I guess for you, let's talk about being once it, like, kicks off and the thing starts, as someone who was such a fan, when you talk about being a character, did you put on a character intentionally for the program, or were you just yourself? And how was it in terms of the strategy piece? Was that immediate, or is it, you know, I'm just curious about the timing of how it all evolves.
I had a plan coming in. I literally had Excel. Since I do that, I had Excel sheets on my best path to win, on the type of everything. I had everything locked. I was so confident coming in. And then I came in and it was like a bit of a shock. I was like, oh my goodness. I was like, okay, one, I'm here. But two, the whole point, or what people had always known Big Brother to do, was you manipulate, you lie to get to the end. And for me, I realized how hard it was to do. And it's not even me saying I'm a better person. That's not it. Because you could see everyone else struggled with it too. It's just, you meet people who this is their absolute dream to be here. And for me to look them in the face and tell them, I'm going to go ahead and keep you here when you know for a fact you're not going to be able to, I couldn't do it. I also thought I was going to come in and win all the competitions. And I was abysmal at competitions. So I was like, all right, I'm going to come in. I'm going to win all the comps. I'm going to take all the males out, because it's always the males who win at the end. Yeah. All these things. I had all these plans and ideas. But 2 things happened. One, I came in. And Big Brother does have a history of prejudice and racism on the show, unfortunately. And usually people of color, black house guests, do not get treated correctly. And up until then, only 1 or 2 have been casted per season. And a lot of times they usually are first, second eliminated, or before jury. I came in and I met 5 other individuals that were black as well. And that was the first time that had ever happened, because CBS had made a change after George Floyd, promising for 50% of their cast to be people of color. And out of the 23 seasons of Big Brother, they had never crowned an African-American winner. But there had been a lot of problems of racism during that time. And so The first day.
When you say that, like within the show, like within the community of people, or within, all of it? Do you know what I mean? Like, is it within the community of people that are there competing?
The people competing. So yeah. I, and how, looking at it objectively, when you remove, you put people into a box, mm-hmm. you remove everything, you remove any types of, I feel like here in the outside world, we have so many kind of prodders, cattle prodders to get us into place. Oh, let me not do that. That's racist. Let me not do that. We have a lot of reminders and things, but you're removing all those reminders from people. You're putting $750,000 in people's faces. And what generally ends up happening is microaggressions can end up coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
People can end up wanting to work with people who they feel more comfortable with or things like that. Mm-hmm. And then also when the paranoia and things set in, the ugly side of people can come out and people can do or say things that outside the house they probably would never do, but you can quickly very, very, very much forget the outside world when you're in there. Mm-hmm. And if you're just looking at that $750,000 and playing a game, you can do things that you never thought you would do. You can say things you never thought you would say. And so, unfortunately, things have happened on a lot of seasons that the public wasn't happy about, the mainstream audiences weren't happy mm-hmm. about. So seeing in that happened throughout the seasons, when we all saw each other the first day, we all decided to make an alliance. And at the time, I'm pretty certain a lot of people felt this way too. I just looked as more of an insurance policy. It wasn't really my strategy. It was just like, okay, that's just in case. If I see someone, I'm not going to vote for him. But I still had my own method mm-hmm. line of how mm-hmm. I wanted to do things. But when somebody in our alliance was targeted the first week, it just turned into something different. And it turned into everyone literally putting their own game decisions or their own game considerations aside in order to propel everyone else forward. And so a lot of people had to make sacrifices. I had super close friends in the game. One was Brittany, whom that was someone who was my, that was my number one, but I had to let her go. Everyone had to let somebody go. And I think it took a toll on all of us mentally.
Yeah.
Because we, to be quite frank, a lot of us had more closer relationships with people outside than with each other. But with this mission and belief of wanting to have the first African-American winner putting forward, we all decided to put that aside until we all got to Final Six.
And is that what happened?
And that's what happened. And we're the largest alliance to ever make that happen. We made history doing that.
Wow.
And it's incredible to see the impact of that when I meet people of color at different events and things who come to me and who cry and who tell me, I grew up watching this game. This game has been a part of some people's, it's their summer, it's what they do every single mm-hmm. summer. And they see people who look like them get cast out every year and they're sad about it. But for that to happen, and it wasn't out of self-interest, it was for our mission and putting things forward, and we had to keep on reminding ourselves that every day, that ended up being so much larger than my purpose. I came on the game to have fun,
right?
And it very quickly, I couldn't have fun. And for me to be able to put that forward, what I had to do was I had to be transparent with people. My game became known as being the transparent person. So if I wanted you to go, I'd say, hey, I do want you to go. And people didn't. And it worked for me because people didn't view me as a threat. And mm-hmm. I was also the cook in the house. So no one wanted to get rid of me because I made great food. Oh,
that's, to have mm-hmm. a good, something that you're a value, right, that you're contributing.
So I was like, okay, if I can't win comps, I need to figure out how I can contribute some way. So I was cooking. And my transparent game, that's what I became known for. My quote-unquote honest game is what kept me off the block the entire game. So I was never even put up for nomination.
Wow.
Up until Final Four. I was the last person in the house to be nominated. I ended up making history in that too. I'm only four other house guests in all Big Brother history have been unnominated their entire time except Final Four.
What is it like just in terms of the, I guess, the accommodations and being there? Do you ever feel claustrophobic? Do you ever feel like, when you're in that situation, you said sort of the paranoia sets in. Is there enough distraction? Is there downtime? Like, are the beds comfortable? Like just some of the stuff that people maybe don't know.
Yeah, plenty of downtime.
Really?
I mean, because it's you don't have anything. They do that on purpose. So I'll give first the kind of how things are. So you're in a, it's a beautiful studio. It's not a house. It's actually a studio. Oh,
okay. Okay.
Each morning, very, very bright lights, studio lights, blare and wake you up every single day and blaring music while this so loudspeaker says, good morning, house guests. Yes. So it's that's what so you wake trippy. Up with. Yes.
Like what time is that?
Around 7:30, 8 a.m. Okay. in the morning. Yes. And then, you're not allowed to go, the outside backyard is a shoebox. So it's a shoebox with kind of lined all the way up to the ceiling. So you're, even though you're outside, you're not really outside and you can only go outside once or twice a week. So
that is really,
yeah. And it's that's what they put these variables specifically so that the paranoia can set in, so that the backstabbing and manipulation can set in, so that the second guessing it's
the
truly
TV. It's what makes it's the what TV, makes the TV, TV, right? Yes. Yeah.
So otherwise you're locked in this house. So there's no way for you to be able to, there's no way for you to be able to kind of blow off some steam or right. anything.
What about
like
working
that.
Out?
They do have a gym. They have a gym, you know, a small gym that has things. And outside, there's a gym area, too. And then they, I mean, they treat you well. Like, we get great groceries every week. We could order lamb chops, salmon. You know, we had a lot of groceries that you have to cook and make. But they have groceries that they put you every week. So your basic concerns are
taking care of your basic
needs. Mm-hmm. But the only thing you're worrying about, but the great thing is, not the great thing, I think how TV is created is, all your basic necessary needs are taken care of. The only thing you have to worry about is what I call not dying, because they feed you this new reality and you have everything, but death is getting evicted. So that's only thing you're worrying about is death. Mm. And how I view it as death, because we treat it as death. Like the person when they're desperately trying to, you see it in their eyes, like, cause all you care about is this game. So they remove all these considerations. The only thing you gotta worry about is just don't die, you know? So you form alliances with people so you don't die. You know, you have your person in the game so don't die. You gotta give up somebody, you know, so you don't die, you know? And like you're just completely obsessed and only think about this game the entire time. It's a completely new reality. You don't want to die. You don't want to end up leaving that house and walking out that door and meeting Julie Chen.
Do you don't want to see Julie Chen. Yeah. So do you feel like you, for that period of time, which I think is what you're saying, but like you cannot really trust anybody?
Yeah.
I mean, like you can pretend trust in terms of that human connection or feeling like someone really has your back, or like it's a strange, I would think, dynamic of like you're trying to create a real connection because that's probably what helps you win. But at the end of the day, like, it's still just a game.
So, yes, but you come in. I think everyone comes in when I'm not going to trust anyone. But 85 days with someone, walls break down. You end up knowing people more. You end up forming bonds and relationships and finding things. And that's where I think the difficulties of the game come in, because you end up having to backstab or turn against people whom you otherwise would have worked with. Or people truly feel, I've met people who've played the game 12 years ago, who still are so hurt by what person, because you're how you're able to get through the game is you form those bonds and that trust in people, and people do trust you. And so you decide whether you're going to use that to play that ruthless objective game of cutting that person off, or if you're going to end up not being able to do it. There are people who, you know, people like me, in my own way, I couldn't, it was too hard for me. I couldn't do it. I had to just tell people, it just
was not, you couldn't do it. Yeah.
I couldn't do it. Yeah.
Are you glad you did it?
I think it's the best and worst thing that's ever happened to me.
Okay.
I'm very happy. Tell me more about that. I think I love the platform that I have. I love the opportunity. I love the fact that I saw something and I said I want to do it, and I decided to go for it. I never knew how difficult it would be on my mental health. I never knew the interesting adjustment period. When I left the house, I made the same things I would do so easily at my previous job at Care Journey. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was learning my job again. I'm so forgetful about things and even to this day, like you have like memory loss and things and stuff like that, because you're just 85 days. I was just doing something completely different, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but I always look at all things work together for good. There was a period of time where I truly regretted that I did it. And I was like, why did I do this? And now I feel like I've healed. at a much better place now, and it's given me such a great understanding of life, like crazy understanding of how life works, I would say. So I'm thankful for that. I had some very difficult periods, but of course we all have difficult periods in life. And I mean, at the end of the day, like, I even when I, you know, get into my thoughts sometimes, I'm like, Asa, you got to take part in a really amazing season that made history and crowning the first African American winner. You got so far in this game, and a lot of people, very few people, I'm pretty much one of the only people who have been able to get through the game barely lying. Like,
pretty amazing.
You're known to lie. You're supposed to, like, you're supposed to lie to get through the game, but I was able to get through it almost unnominated and barely lying. And, like, I love the fact that I was able to play the game my own way, and figure it out and do it for myself and figure my own way. And I almost brought myself to final two, you know? So
I wanted to ask that too. Are you, like, how did you feel in terms of when you got so close? Did you start to really think, like, holy shit, I'm going to win this? Like, did you believe that the whole time? And like, how harsh was it, you know, when that wasn't what happened?
We are busy scheduling relatable interviews for 2023, and we love our relatable community. If you or someone you know would be a good guest for Relatable, let us know. You can send an email to info@tfasoftskills.com. Include the potential guest name and contact information. Please send all suggestions to info@tfasoftskills.com.
Doubts in my gameplay. I definitely had some doubts going through, because as I was going through, I'm like, okay, I haven't been nominated, but I haven't won anything. I'm like, I'm not going to have enough of a case. And I'm like, how am I even going to get to the end? Because I felt that if all six of us got there, I felt like I'd be the first to go. And I did some observing. I sat and looked at my group of six, and I saw what I felt like wasn't in. I was like, okay, I had a very close person in the game. And he also wasn't winning competitions either, and he was my closest person in the house. And I could see that he was very close to another individual who was winning competitions. And I basically pitched to them. I said, all right, let's have a final three. And I said, I told my close friend, Big D, I said, look, me and you, if I win, I'm going to take you. So you're going to get second place nevertheless, because I figured out that they had a final two. And I told Xavier, I said, Xavier, if you win, go ahead and take him. If I win, I'll take him. So we're going to fight for first and third. So they basically, because the way that the final game is structured is, when it's final three, everyone competes in the first competition. And the winner of that one goes straight to finals. And then the two losers compete in the second competition. And the person who won that one goes to finals and competes with that person.
Okay.
And then the winner of that one can pick out of the three who they want to take to final two for jury to vote for the winner. So I felt like I appealed to the one individual, Xavier, because I felt that he felt that he could beat me. But I knew the final competition was memory, and I had very good long-term memory, and I'd been studying the whole season. So I was like, okay, cool. If he thinks he can beat me, he's going to want to protect me. And then with Big D, I was like, you're going to get final two with either way. So I was like, I felt that was my best path to win, and I ended up...
And is that what happened?
I got the final three I wanted, and when I got to the end, my person who, my best friend, ended up turning against me, and so I ended up, I ended up wanting to take the eventual winner instead. I'm thinking that how I felt about it was like, if God wanted me when I was going to win, and I was going to go ahead and do my best, basically, in terms of arguing my standpoint of how I could win the game, because I felt that even though he won more competitions than me, we had differentiators. I had barely been nominated. I had a great relationship with all the jury members. They all liked me socially as a person. And I felt that if I kind of gave enough of a fight and was able to, with self-awareness, explain my case and my path to gain the final two, I had that chance at winning. So I finally got to, first competition happened. He won that one. Second competition, I won it. And then we got to that final HOH. I got 7 right. You got 8 right. So
wow.
I lost by one question.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so how hard was that to lose?
That was hard.
Yeah. To be that close.
Yeah, it was
It's
hard.
Like one thing if you go out, you know, in the first round or second round,
right? Yeah, like, oh, I tried,
But to get that close, then to feel like, and by that, just by that one question.
One question. And I was reminded of it when I got taken out the CBS lot and took my Uber to the hotel. The Uber driver recognized me immediately and said, how did it feel to be one question away from winning $750,000? Oh, that was the first person I met outside of, you know, this whole 85-day experience. And so it definitely ate at me for some time of just, and oh, the question I missed was about my best friend in the house, Brittany. So.
Oh, geez.
And I, it wasn't that I didn't know it. I just, it was a trick question. I understood it wrong.
Oh my gosh.
It was hard.
And then let's talk a little. So obviously that's going to take time to process that piece of it, just being close and then not winning. And first, I should say like, congratulations on one, like you were saying, pursuing something that is, you know, like to see something that you enjoy and that you want to go after, and then to get it, and then to play it so well and to get that close. That's pretty amazing.
Thank you. Congrats
on that. And then what about, you talked about the mental health. I think it would be helpful for two reasons to talk a little bit more about that. One, what was the impact and how did that surface and show up? And then equally important, I think, is what have you done to help that, right? Because I think a lot of people can relate. Maybe you're not on Big Brother, but some of what you're going to talk about, I think, are issues or challenges that we all deal with, depending, you know, where we are in our life.
Sure, absolutely. So I think what offset it was, in that house, I leaned on my faith a lot. So I was reading my Bible a lot. I was talking to God a lot. And I felt in all of my decisions, he was kind of telling me what to do. And a lot of my decisions, some people watching, didn't seem sensical when making them. And the things that I would do or things I would say, but I felt like I was following what I felt that he wanted me to do. So for me to get there and then me not get it, that was a disappointment. But it was a very big adjustment to leave the house and to find people. Like I said, this fan base is very passionate. And to find people have such polarizing opinions on you. With this love comes hate as well. I got, when I, in some of my game decisions, I end up taking out somebody that was a fan favorite. So people were really upset about it. So my family got death threats during that time. I end up working with the guys in the game, which were, the girls were kind of more the fan favorites and the guys weren't, from some behavior that they had exhibited. So me deciding to work with guys in the game, I was being called, like, you know, a woman hater, pick me, all these types of things. So dealing with, you know, social media and, you know, hate messages in my DMs every day, and like the death threats, and like the, you know, I played the game, like I said, very differently than many other plays. So people have their opinions on that, and some people would call me a horrible game player, or a terrible game player, or stupid or dumb or things. So to walk in a house and just be Aza, and, you know, I'm Aza, I like to bike, I chill, I work at Care Journey, and to walk out and to know that, like, there are, like, a large number of people that really don't like you, or to have such, to the point that they take actions against it, was a big adjustment for me. I think also, too, which is one of the reasons why I ended up departing from Care Journey, is that when I left, I was so focused on getting back to Aza, I leaped back into my job. But I think I should have taken at least like a month of break before going back, because like I said, I take such pride in my work, and I wasn't able to do my job as well as I felt like that I had. I was making all these mistakes and I was like so confused and things. And now I find from talking to other people in the house that like memory loss is common, forgetfulness is common, all these things. And then with the paranoia and seeing that I'm an empath and I take things in. So seeing people struggle in that game, seeing people turn on you in that game, seeing like people go through mental struggles in that house and watching things, and it was very uncomfortable for me. It was traumatic, to be frank.
It's definitely, for sure.
And I had a lot of like, I'd wake up, I mean, I had like, I mean, PTSD, basically. Yes, I'd wake up at night with like sweats and like, you know, panic attacks, you know, reliving memories or things in the house. when I'd be around certain members of the cast, I'd start panicking and things, and like I would have panic attacks while I'm working. I'd get triggered at different types of things, and like this is, unfortunately, it's quite common. That was
difficult. They provide any type of psychological support either during or post?
They provide, they have a psychiatrist that will check in with you every once in a while. And then if you insist, you can get 6 sessions. So I got six
post,
sessions from,
post
yes.
the thing. Mm-hmm. And then, forgive me, while it's mm-hmm. being, while you're in it and you're playing the game and everything, it's not being aired. Or is it all aired?
It's all being aired
I'm
real
sorry,
time.
I don't.
Oh, no,
I'm
it's okay.
I'm going to show that I'm not...
No worries. No worries at all.
That I'm not familiar, watch it a lot. But, yeah I guess that doesn't make sense because it's live. It's, like,
it's
all about
live.
Reality.
Yes.
So you don't really know... Like, in some ways, you're cut off from what the conversation is until
yes.
you get out.
Until you
get... And
yes.
then once you get out, you're obviously curious, and you're going to be effectively looking at that and probably reviewing some of that.
Yeah.
And that's when all this stuff is
all
coming
the onset,
out. Yeah.
Yes. That's what makes this show, I think this is the hardest reality show ever.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it different from any other show. So many other shows, you have that experience, you come back, you can heal, you can chill, and then you can prepare yourself
yeah.
for the, what you know. It,
mm-hmm.
But for this, you literally walk in as like chilling,
mm-hmm.
I would say, and
yeah.
then you walk out and it's like, whoa, like you, no one can prepare themselves for.
And it
for
is
that.
it's such a bizarre situation that there's nothing else like it. It's not like you can translate that really to other life matters, right?
No.
It's just so, but it's such a bizarre
yes.
situation
yep.
that
yep.
I could see it being, how do you even relate that experience to your life? It almost feels like it's this, I mean, like you're abducted
yes.
by aliens, right?
Yes.
And it's
no,
a completely,
really? Yes.
like
it's,
it,
so
it's such a different experience and,
yes.
and no one can relate to it. Nobody understands. And I think I could see that being really challenging.
Yeah. And it's 16 people who you form bonds with them. You have to form bonds with them, but 16 strangers that you have lied and manipulated with for 85 days. So you have this weird
yeah.
trauma bond with them too.
Trauma, yeah.
And it's every person or individual, I talk to people in my cast in my season, and they're like, man, I'm still working through some stuff now, you
yeah.
know? But it's so unique and different, and they also pick ordinary people too. So it's not like you're picking a celebrity that
or,
yeah. is used to, you know, seeing these things or got an adjustment to it. You're picking ordinary people. And it's a complete shock when you leave just to see the impact.
Do you forget? We are going to move on, but I do have, like, do you forget you're being recorded after a while? Or do you always know that you're being, like, is it because after day, after day, after
mm-hmm.
day, you just start to forget? Or is it always on your mind? Like,
most people forget. I didn't. It was an adjustment for me. That's why I had trouble sleeping at night, too. I couldn't sleep at night. So
mm-hmm.
I would sleep maybe for an hour a night.
Oh, that's not good.
Because it was, I just always just, I felt the, because the things, I think how you really notice things is when, like, say, you know, we'd have arguments or people are yelling at people. You usually, like, you're used to someone stepping in. But I just remember just this silence in the house, and no one was ever going to step in, but everyone was watching. So knowing that,
it's so Truman Show, right? I mean,
yes.
it's like,
oh, yes.
yeah,
Truman
it's
Show,
so,
yeah.
yeah.
No
yeah.
one's going to step in, but everyone is watching. So I always had that, there was always something in the back of my head, but I just kind of adjusted to it and was comfortable with it,
right.
I guess you would say.
Yeah.
yeah.
And so now let's talk about just the healing of that. So in terms of, obviously, there's some therapy, and like, what are some of the other things that you've done? And we'll talk too now about kind of this next chapter for
yeah.
you and what you're doing now.
Yes.
And maybe that's part of the healing too, is figuring out, okay, you had the experience, like you said, maybe there's some, like, what can you take from it that's going to help
yeah.
propel you forward,
yes.
right?
Well, my support system has been amazing.
Really? That's good.
My family was awesome.
Yeah.
When I got off the plane, I literally barely could talk for 2 weeks. I was like a zombie. It was, my parents were like really weirded out. But
yeah.
my friends and my family literally just took me in. And just were so kind and just like constantly checking in on me, making sure I'm okay. My mother would, you know, if she didn't hear from me, she would just show up at my house, you know, and things like that. And those things were necessary and needed. So having a good support system is
okay.
paramount.
Yeah.
I think about what my family and my friends have done for me. And I'm so thankful because I know that I would not have been, I don't know what I would have been, but it would not have been good.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing I would say. Having the self-awareness to see someone about it too, is very yeah. good as well.
Knowing that you're in trauma or yes. no, knowing that you are having, yeah, yes. the anxiety and the yep. stress and the signs.
Yep. Exercise yeah. helped a lot. Mm-hmm. Keeping myself busy. Because I could see, like, you know, depression starting to set in when I just kind of would sit and isolate. Mm-hmm. I'm so used to being in an isolated environment, I would isolate myself from other people. So trying not to be isolated and trying to stay out of that isolation. And then I was so overwhelmed with this new adjustment that work for me at the time was right. overwhelming. So stepping away for a bit, I yeah. think, helped too. Mm-hmm. And me being able to kind of reset and like, okay, cool. All right. Let me just chill and, like, you know, get back to, like, me as mm-hmm. to the things that are my identifiers yeah. and things. So I had a lot. But one of the things that was such that helped me through COVID so much was joining a bike club. And my bike club helped. I spent a lot of time being isolated, but I got back into that, you know.
Yeah.
Just finding those things that give you true peace and happiness and literally just throwing yourself into it. And but at the same time, making sure not to be overwhelmed.
And then I think you mentioned the cooking and you were doing, so let's talk a little bit now about what's next for you in terms of what you think, you know, this has sort of informed for you in terms of mm-hmm. how you want to proceed.
Yeah. So, I'm really happy about this platform that I've got, yeah. you know, yeah. I launched a digital cookbook. It did well.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I did a cookbook based because on the live feeds, people would watch me make food. Yeah. So they were like, oh my goodness, what is this? What is that? I also introduced house guests to African food. So I taught them how to make jollof rice. I taught them how to make puff puff. And so I have that in my cookbooks.
Mm-hmm.
What I also do now are I do chef collaborations with restaurants. So I sell tickets to them. And so we can sit, we watch Big Brother while they try my food. I call it house chops, and I've done them in here in DC, I've done them in New York, I've done them in Chicago, I've done them in LA, multiple times in LA, multiple times in in DC. And so being able to meet people who are not just fans of myself or the show, but them able to have my food as well too has been very gratifying as well too. I love that. Really the best thing I would say is this platform and just me being able to, like I said, I don't know if I'm going to be that linear person that's going to do one thing.
Right.
But I love that with this platform, I can just reinvent myself every yeah. single time. You know, now I'm like, some people call me funny. So I'm like working on like doing like a one woman show. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I have a platform of people who actually want to use it and things yeah. like that. Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask about the theater and just entertainment industry yes. as a whole now, like given... Maybe that there's been some time to process and to heal. And then obviously it is a huge platform and there is a huge network and there is maybe opportunities there that you wouldn't otherwise have yes. had you not done that. So yep.
Yes, it's been great. It's yeah. been great. And I would say really most of it has come from me using my own platform. Reality television is something that is quite, it's very unique. Like in the entertainment and theater industry, it's actually not as respected. Right. So you would right. think that I would get opportunities easily, but no,
yeah,
not really. Yeah. However, I have a platform and I'm seeing what I look and I observe is I look at people who, I mean, you look at people who start off on Vine, who start off on YouTube, who start off on TikTok, who are now able to get to those places. Right. And it's by utilizing their own platform. And that's the step I'm taking now when I'm yeah. using my own platform to get this one woman show going on. And then mm-hmm. who knows where it can go after that. Yeah. So I'm very happy for the platform because I can pursue my interests and also, you know, get paid for it as well too financially, but just pursue my passions.
Do you feel pressure to constantly grow the platform? Do you feel like there's kind of people behind you pushing you, or does it feel very natural in terms of, it just sounds like you're this intersection of what you love to do anyway is what you're able to engage in, and then the people that follow it all seems to
yes.
intersect. So yes. that's what it seems like, but I'm curious if yeah. you feel a pressure.
No, it was a journey to that. So when I first got out the house, I was just so overwhelmed because people wanted yeah. different things.
From and you, then, yeah.
But I realized as I was doing it, I was like, but I don't really like this. So I was like, I've now worked my platform to, okay, do the things that you actually love so that it's not going to seem like work when you're getting things done and yeah. people are going to enjoy it anyway.
Yeah.
So that's why I do my cookbook. That's what I've done with house chops.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cool how like my background.
And you still love the show as a fan. Like, do you, now that you've been in it, can you watch it or can you not watch it the same as you used to?
It's not the same, unfortunately. No.
Yeah.
And what's funny is my friends are huge fans now and they're like, they're huge into it, and now they're life leaders. They never watched the show before, yeah. But I keep up with Twitter, Reddit. I go on like different forums to like keep up on things. But it's so weird. Like I hear music, and it's like it's still cringy to me. It's I know it's so weird.
How long? So you graduated, let's say.
Yeah.
You left. When did it end for you?
A little over a year ago.
So you're still. I mean, that's still pretty.
September 29th. Yeah. Was my last day in the house.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so we might have to have you back, but let me before I don't want to keep you forever. In terms of. I don't know if you know this about me. Maybe I think you probably do based on our other conversations. So I am really passionate about soft skills development, and in particular, soft skills development in people throughout key milestones of their career, even young adults as they leave high school and go to college, and college into entry-level talent, and then entry-level talent into leadership positions. And I believe strongly that soft skills are what are a differentiator. You can build your technical expertise, but that like soft skills is really what makes you stand out, and frankly it helps you to be effective at life. And so when I talk about them, you know, interpersonal skills like communication, collaboration, confidence, like it's nuanced, right? And I'm curious for you, you know, given everything that you've talked about so far, you know, whether you apply it and you think about it with Big Brother, or even more holistically in your life in terms of what you're doing now, or even as a professional, what's one or two for you that you believe has really made an impact and helped you to be successful?
I would say two things. Mm-hmm. Being a good, effective communicator. And for me, I think communication is being able to listen. And when I say listen, it's one, listen to a person, but also take things in. Like in the mistakes that you make, and being able to understand that and take that in and use that to become a better person. And then I would say empathy. There's just so many people in this world who don't really care. But I remember being resentful for working 2 years at front desk at a hotel. But those 2 years have just taught me so much and have helped me in every single path in life. My hospitality is what's helped me to provide the events that I have. I care about the events that I put on. So I care about the people. I want them to have a good experience. So it's not transactional. And that's what makes an event different from just an opportunity to meet Aza into an actual experience, you know? Mm-hmm. I look at empathy in terms of being caring about people. Like I said, working as sales ops and taking care of the concerns of the sales team. And it's so cute and funny how they turn into little whiny kids, and it's so funny, but you care about it. You know, you're not just taking as, you take their opinions in, and you want things to be better, and actually caring, that's empathy. So I love that I do think that soft skills are completely transformative, and it's what can transform a worker into a leader, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I would say effective communication through listening and empathy has helped me so much in life, most definitely.
Thank you for that. I love it. That's the soundbite. I love that. And then the other thing, which I'm really curious, because sometimes when I get to this point in interviews with people, I have a sense, but with you, I really don't. In terms of your own path, and if you were to sit down with young Aza, right? Young Aza that's graduating from Miami, or even before, maybe, like any advice that you would give her that would help make this path a little bit easier? Something that, you know, not necessarily, I don't look necessarily for big sea change, right? Because I think all your path is what it leads you to be. I do think, however, there's some opportunities to like tap on the shoulder and be like, hey, girl. maybe, you know, directionally kind of nudge this way and that. So what advice would you give young Aza?
I would tell young Aza, slow down, chill out.
Yeah.
I laugh at what I told myself back. I was like, all right, I'm going to be meet my husband in college, and then I'm going to graduate and get married. And then by 25, I'm going to have 2 kids, and I'm going to go to law school at 26. Have probably 3 kids by the time I'm 30. And I just remember having complete set map. And it's about the journey. It really truly is about the journey, what you said. It's not about that. If I reached to everything that I wanted to at 25, 26, I have how much more of my life that is going to be, you know, that's still going to be filled with unhappiness mm-hmm. because I've set or achieved all this that I thought was it for me. And it's something I still tell myself now. But I would tell young Aza, chill out. It's okay. It's about the journey. And every single experience that you have is only just a pocket of you being able to be the best person right. that you can be. Slow down. It's about the journey. Don't worry about getting to 100 right now. Yeah. You're going to get there. It's coming.
And I think for you also, as I, listen, I love that, by the way. I think the journey, it's so hard to be present in the journey when you are maybe goal-oriented and you're geared to succeed and you want to achieve great things. And it's like that balance of like, oh, I want that, but I can also like, you got to be in this now to get the most out of it. But I think too, what's so cool about your journey in terms of the hospitality work, but then finding the revenue growth role and then kind of getting to be a Salesforce certified, you know, all of that and all of those skills actually probably helped you to be more effective in the game. It makes you more effective, certainly in what you're trying to do now, like where you're trying to, because you have a background and you have knowledge, like to your point, I think that's so, it's such a great reminder that like, you don't really know until you kind of are past it that you're like, oh, this yep. is why it's so all true. Like, this is why it's connecting or this is why it works
so
for me.
So true. And I'm working through that with Big Brother now because
it's still so soon.
Mm-hmm. And I'm still trying to figure out, like, God, why did you let me do this? But I know for a fact every single part in life, my disappointments that I've been like, God, why? Or like, why am I not here? I look back, I'm like, oh, okay, I get it now. Mm-hmm. Hospitality for 2 years, I get it. I completely get it now. You know, I get so many of the things that I had viewed as dips in my life. Yeah. I get it. And it's life experience that I have. And I'm going to get that with Big Brother too.
Yeah, you will. You know, it'll come. I really am so grateful that you decided to come and do this with us. I know you have a lot going on and you have a lot of demand for your time.
This
and
was
so
a pleasure.
It just was so great to see you. And I know all of our friends at Carrie Jane are going to listen.
Oh,
they're going to be so excited.
I
know. We'll have to figure. I was just thinking, I'm like, we got to figure out a way to have you come back maybe and do one of the all hands. Like, we'll interview you or something. That'd
awesome.
Be fun.
That's
we'll do
fun.
Something.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, great.
Be good.
Yay.
Thank you so much.
Thank
I really
you,
appreciate
Teresa.
It.
Thank you.
It was great. It was great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Aza, for joining today and for being so vulnerable to talk about your inspiring journey. I loved hearing about how you overcame the challenges in your job search and how you have turned your passion and skill for cooking into a book. Thank you for sharing about how you leaned on your faith in difficult times on the show and as you transitioned back into the real world. I loved hearing your advice about being an effective communicator and the importance of really listening to people to make sure they feel seen. And of course, for all the juicy tidbits on the filming and what it was like to be on Big Brother. Thank you to Missy for producing this episode and to Hannah for your support. A huge thank you to our relatable community for listening. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please take a moment and subscribe either on YouTube or your favorite streaming platform. Relatable is sponsored by TFA Soft Skills, and you can find more information about Relatable and our sponsor by visiting www.tfasoftskills.com. Until next time, this is Teresa Freeman with Relatable. Stay connected.